Chapter 8, Voyage Homeward. March 21 is a day to be remembered by me. I have never suffered it to pass wholly unnoticed since the year 1748. On that day the Lord sent from on high and delivered me out of deep waters. I continued at the pump from 3 in the morning till near noon, and then I could do no more. I went and lay down upon my bed, uncertain and almost indifferent whether I should rise again. In an hour's time I was called. Not being able to pump, I went to the helm and steered the ship till midnight, expecting a short interval for refreshment. I had here leisure and opportunity to think of my former religious professions, the callings, warnings, and deliverances I had met with, the licentious course of my life, particularly my unparalleled effrontery in making the gospel the subject of profane ridicule. I thought, allowing the scripture premises, there never was nor could be such a sinner as myself. Then, comparing the advantages I had broken through, concluded at first that my sins were too great to be forgiven. The scriptures seemed to say the same. I had formerly been well acquainted with the Bible, and many passages on this occasion returned to my memory, particularly those passages, Proverbs 1:24 to 31, Hebrews 6:4 through 6, and 2 Peter 2 verse 20, which seemed so exactly to suit my case and character as to bring with them a presumptive proof of a divine original. Thus, as I have said, I waited with fear and impatience to receive my inevitable doom. Yet, though I had thoughts of this kind, they were exceedingly faint and disproportionate. It was not till long after, perhaps several years, when I had gained some clearer views of the infinite righteousness and grace of Jesus Christ my Lord, that I had a deep and strong apprehension of my state by nature and practice. Perhaps till then I could not have borne the sight. So wonderfully does the Lord proportion the discoveries of sin and grace. He knows our frame, and that if he were to put forth the greatness of his power, a poor sinner would be instantly overwhelmed and crushed like a moth. The exercises of his mind. When I saw beyond all probability that there was still hope of respite, and heard about 6 in the evening that the ship was freed from water, there arose a gleam of hope. I thought I saw the hand of God displayed in our favor, and I began to pray. I could not utter the prayer of faith. I could not draw near to a reconciled God and call him my Father. My prayer was like the cry of ravens, which yet the Lord does not disdain to hear. I now began to think of that Jesus whom I had so often derided. I recollected the particulars of his life and of his death, a death for sins not his own, but for those who in their distress should put their trust in him. And now I chiefly wanted evidence. The comfortless principles of infidelity were deeply riveted, and I rather wished than believed that these things were real facts. The great question now was how to obtain faith. I speak not of an appropriating faith, of which I then knew neither the nature nor necessity, but how I should gain assurance that the scriptures were of divine inspiration, and a sufficient warrant for the exercise of trust and hope in God. One of the first helps I received in consequence of a determination to examine the New Testament more carefully was from Luke 11, verse 13. I had been sensible that to profess faith in Jesus Christ, when in reality I did not believe his history, was no better than a mockery of the heart-searching God. But here I found a spirit spoken of, which was to be communicated to those who ask it. I reasoned thus, if this book is true, the promise in this passage is true likewise. I have need of that very spirit by which the whole was written in order to understand it. He has promised here to give that spirit to those who ask. I must therefore pray, and if it is of God, he will make good his own word. My purposes were strengthened by John 7, verse 17. I concluded that though I could not say from my heart that I believed the gospel, yet I would for the present take it for granted, and that by studying it in this light, I should be more and more confirmed in it. If what I am writing could be perused by our modern infidels, they would say, for I know their manner, that I was very desirous to persuade myself into this opinion. I confess I was, and so would they be, if the Lord would show them, as he was pleased to show me at that time, the absolute necessity of some expedient to interpose between a righteous God and a sinful soul. In the gospel I saw at least a peradventure of hope, but on every other side I was surrounded with black, unfathomable despair. The wind was now moderate, but continued fair, and we were drawing nearer to our port. We began to recover from our consternation, though we were greatly alarmed by our circumstances. The water having floated all our movables into the hold, all the casks of provisions had been beaten to pieces by the violent motion of the ship. Our livestock, such as pigs, sheep, and poultry, had been washed overboard in the storm. All the provisions we saved, except the fish I mentioned, and some food intended for the hogs, and there was but little of this left, would have subsisted us but a week at scanty allowance. The sails, too, were mostly blown away, so that we advanced but slowly even while the wind was fair. We imagined ourselves about 100 leagues from the land, but were in reality much further. Thus we proceeded with an alternating between hope and fear. My leisure time was chiefly employed in reading and meditating on the Scriptures, and praying to the Lord for mercy and instruction. Disappointments. Things continued thus for 4 or 5 days, or perhaps longer. We were awakened one morning by the joyful shouts of the watch upon deck proclaiming the sight of land. The dawning was uncommonly beautiful. The light, just strong enough to discover distant objects, presented us with a gladdening prospect. It seemed a mountainous coast, about 20 miles from us, terminating in a cape or point. A little further, 2 or 3 small islands or hummocks seemed to be rising out of the water. The appearance and position seemed exactly answerable to our hopes, resembling the northwest extremity of Ireland, which we were steering for. We congratulated each other, having no doubt that if the wind continued, we should be in safety and plenty the next day. The remainder of our brandy, a little more than a pint, was, by the captain's orders, distributed among us. We likewise ate up the residue of our bread for joy at this welcome sight, and were in the condition of men suddenly reprieved from death. While we were thus alert, the mate, with a graver tone than the rest, sunk our spirits by saying that he hoped it might prove land at last. If one of the common soldiers had first said this, the rest would have beat him for raising such an unreasonable doubt. It brought on, however, warm debates and disputes whether it was land or not. The case was soon unanswerably decided. The day was advancing fast, and in a little time one of our fancied islands began to grow red from the approach of the sun, which soon arose just over it. We had been prodigal too hastily. Our land was nothing but clouds. In half an hour, more than the whole appearance, in half an hour more, the whole appearance was dissipated. Seamen have often known deceptions of this sort, but in our extremity we were very loath to be undeceived. However, we comforted ourselves that though we could not see the land yet, we should soon if wind continued fair. But alas, we were deprived of this hope also. That very day our fair wind subsided, and the next morning the gale sprung up from the southwest, directly against us, and continued for more than a fortnight. The ship was so wrecked that we were obliged to keep the kind always on the broken side, unless the weather was quite moderate. With the wind in that quarter, we were driven still further from our port to the northward of all Ireland, as far as the Lewis or, or Western Islands of Scotland, but a long way to the west. In a word, our station deprived us of any hope of being relieved by other vessels. It may indeed be questioned whether our ship was not the very first to be in that part of the ocean at that season of the year. Provisions now began to grow very short. Half of a salted cod was a day's subsistence for 12 people. We had plenty of fresh water, but not a drop of liquor, no bread, hardly any clothes, and very cold weather. We had incessant labor with the pumps to keep the ship above water. Much labor and little food wasted us fast, and one man died. Yet our sufferings were light in comparison with our fears. We had a terrible prospect of being either starved to death or reduced to feed upon one another. Our expectations grew darker every day, and I had a further trouble peculiar to myself. The captain, whose temper was quite soured by distress, was hourly reproaching me as the sole cause of the calamity. He was confident that if I was thrown overboard and not otherwise, they should be preserved from death. He did not intend to make the experiment, but the continual repetition of this in my ears gave me much uneasiness, especially as my conscience seconded his words. I thought it very probable that all that had befallen us was on my account. I was at last found out by the powerful hand of God. However, as we proceeded, I began to conceive hopes greater than all my fears. When we were ready to give up all for lost, and despair was on every countenance, the wind came about to the very point we wished it, so as best to suit that broken part of the ship which must be kept out of the water. As gently as our few remaining sails could bear it continued, though at an unsettled time of the year, till we once more were called up to see the land. We saw the island Tory, and the next day anchored in Lough Swilly, Ireland. This was April 8, just 4 weeks after the damage we sustained from the sea. When we came into the port, our very last victuals were boiling in the pot. Before we had been there 2 hours, the wind began to blow with great violence. If we had continued at sea that night in our shattered and feebled condition, we would, to all human appearances, have gone to the bottom. About this time, I began to know that there is a God who hears and answers prayer. How many times has he appeared for me since this great deliverance? Yet, alas, how distrustful and ungrateful is my heart unto this hour.